challenge is to incorporate the Word of God into our lives. And one of the things I keep trying to realize or trying to remember is that I have a completely different method of incorporating the Word into my life than God does. And surprising, surprising, His way is right. See, what I want to apply the Bible to my life, and I want lists. I want specifics. Here's what to do. I enjoy hearing sermons or messages of 1, 2, and 3. I like those. It doesn't bother me in the least that I never remember them. Or that I do a terrible job of keeping them, but I like those lists. God has a completely different way of applying it. Now, in the Bible, there certainly are very specific guidelines to meet many different situations. However, that's not the primary way He wants to equip us. He does not want us to learn how to do things. He wants us to learn about Him. And His method is, we know things, we learn things, and then we become equipped ourselves to deal with those situations instead of memorizing things to do. And in the book of Hebrews, that's a classic example. Book of Hebrews, there are very few commands. In the passage today, chapter 12, there's just very few commands. Mostly it's, we just know things. And if we know things, it will make a difference in our life. Now, book of Hebrews, some very heavy, difficult passages we've seen. Very controversial passages. I think the way to clear them all up, remember, as you go through the book of Hebrews, every passage, we identify the common thread, and that is how God speaks to me. So we keep in mind that's His theme, how God speaks to me, how God has spoken in different ages, how God speaks now. And then in the book of Hebrews, the author lists a lot of misconceptions of things that we think the way God speaks to us, and we're wrong. For example, we have a misconception. He speaks to me as I pass those tests He brings into my life. He speaks to me through my guilty conscience. He speaks to me as I obey. Now, all those sound right, but they're the opposite, which would be wrong, wouldn't it? The book of Hebrews says we have a better situation than that. He does not speak to us in testing. He doesn't speak to us in a guilty conscience. He does not speak to us as we obey. He does not withdraw from us as we disobey. We have a better situation. He speaks to us as we rest. From what? From all that. From worrying about being tested. From worrying about Him guiding me through a guilty conscience. They're worrying about, am I obeying enough for Him to speak to me? Passage today, we look at another misconception of how God speaks to us. This one is one that's going to be firmly ingrained in our thinking. And it's not correct. That is the misconception that God speaks to me through discipline. Now, I want to say very quickly, God does discipline us, but it's not at all what we think. See, I think here's a common misconception. Christians think this. Well, let me say, I'm sorry if you don't. Here's what I think. Here's what I tend to think that's wrong. I tend to think, one, I sin. I fall out of line. I disobey. Secondly, then I fall out of fellowship. Well, once I do, I better quickly confess, repent. Then the fellowship's restored. Or, if I don't do that soon enough, or maybe if I miss one, or maybe just because, step three, God will punish me. Yeah, sometimes just because. Sometimes if I confess, repent enough, He won't do it. But if I don't do it quick enough, He's going to jump in there with a paddle. Now, we don't say punishment. We say discipline. But we mean punishment, don't we? We think God whips us. And Baptist, well, I thank God I grew up in a Baptist church, but the Baptist may be the worst about this taking us to the woodshed analogy. Maybe the worst. God spanks us. God takes us to the woodshed. And the analogy is, well, human parents do that. God does it to us. Now, how does, in our concept, how does God whip us? And I think the main way people think God whips us is by bringing adverse circumstances into our life. That's how He punishes us. Then step four, once I've been whipped enough, I get back in fellowship. but I better tread lightly because he's still got that belt. I bet all of us to some degree live thinking like that. You know what? None of that is true. Oh, step one is true. We sin. That's the only part of the sequence that's correct. Now, if what I just described is how we picture our lives, it's going to hinder great blessings God has for us. Now, in the passage today, we're going to focus on God's discipline. And when I was reading the passage this week, I thought, how ironic. Hebrews chapter 12 is the most often quoted passage to explain how God whips us. And Hebrews chapter 12 is the clearest picture that He does not. How ironic. Now, if we've seen many times, the word discipline generally means what? You remember? It means teaching. But there are many forms of teaching, aren't there? In the world, there's many forms of teaching. And Scripture has different words. All the times we see the word discipline in the Bible, there are different words that behind that word discipline. But they all refer to different ways of teaching. Pastor today, a powerful way He teaches us. It's not in the classroom. It's not teaching us things like a teacher would. It's more developing us. Now, if we understand what discipline means in this passage, we will not dread it. In fact, we'll welcome it. If we understand what discipline is, we'll say, well, give me more of that. Now, what we should do with this passage is you should read the whole thing. Because the way it builds on images. It sets a picture and then continues to develop that picture. To save time, I'm going to go ahead and give you the overview. I want to give you three items that we're going to see in this passage. First thing I want to do is establish what's the context of this so-called discipline. Two, I want to look at a picture. There's an image that's being painted. And three, who is being addressed? In other words, who is the student in this discipline? So first, let's look at the context. Discipline is, yes, it's God teaching us in a specific kind of way. And yes, I want to make it clear, discipline is in the context of sin. In fact, discipline is in response to sin. The issue is, whose sin? Right? If discipline is a response to sin, the question is, who has sinned? Whose sin triggers God's discipline? Is it ours? Hebrews 12:1, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us. He's referring to the heroes of faith, the hall of fame of faith in chapter 11. And they're witnesses. Not that we're witnessing them, it's that not that they're witnessing us, it's that we witness them. We witness their lives. Let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run. Let me stop here. The picture is our life is a race. We're trying to get to the finish line. We're trying to have normal lives, waiting for the rapture. But sin keeps tripping us up. Let us run with, it's translated endurance. I don't like that word at all. It really means resilience. That's kind of a big difference. To me, we think about endurance, I think about getting hard and stoic. And resilient means almost the opposite of that. Roll with the flow. Or have a nice, normal, gentle run without that sin tripping us up. So we're trying to run this race, but sin keeps hitting at our ankles and tripping us up. Now, as we run that race, we of course keep our mind focused on the finish line. What's our finish line? The rapture. Verse 2, fixing our eyes on Jesus. All right, now, so we're running a race. That's our life. The finish line is Jesus. We're looking there. We want to run. We want to have a smooth race, don't we? But we keep tripping up because there's something out there on the track and it's sin. Is it our sin? Well, look at verse 3. Here's the context in which we look at Jesus. For consider Him who has endured such hostility. Oh, look at this. By sinners against Himself. He's our example. So that you will not grow weary and lose heart. We look at Jesus as our example. Now, sins certainly impacted Jesus' life, didn't they? They put obstacles in His life. They tripped Him up. Now, was it His own sins? No. It was the sins of the world, right? He says, consider Him who has endured such hostility by sinners against Himself. And He said, He's our example. Therefore, in this passage, the context is God's discipline, and the context is sin. The sin that interrupts our lives, impacts, trips us up. But do you see? It's clearly not talking about our own sins. Do you see that? He says, no. As our example, look at Jesus, how He dealt with sin committed against Him. Boy, if we just understand that, that the concept of discipline here is how to respond to not our sin, but sin against us. We're running the race. We get tripped up. Now, let me say very quickly, yes, we do add our own sin to the mix. And we get tripped up in our own sin. No question about that. But Hebrews 12, he's not talking about that. He's talking about things the world throws against us. So, we begin by establishing the context. That is that the discipline, the teaching here, is in the context of attacks of the world against us. People, circumstances, trials in general. We're trying to run a race. We're trying to hang in there. We're trying to be resilient. And those circumstances come into our life that are adverse, those trials. So in the passage, it's not really how He teaches us like a teacher. It's how He develops us. It's ironic. Again, Hebrews 12 is used to prove that God whips us. And the point of Hebrews 12 is to prove that He does not whip us. In fact, the point of Hebrews 12 is not to explain how God whips us. The point of Hebrews 12 is to explain to us how God keeps us from being whipped. It could not be more opposite. There's the context. Now, maybe more importantly, I want to look at the imagery. There is a picture here. There is a setting for the teaching, both of those things. And the reason I say that is, he says, consider our example, Jesus, who had to endure that kind of stuff against Him. I'm glad you said it, because I'll reiterate, we do sin ourselves, certainly, and cause problems in our life, but that's not what Hebrews 12 is talking about. That's the kind. Now, the setting is important, too, because there is an image here. And if we miss the image here, we're going to miss the whole concept of discipline, teaching, development. Verse 4, he says, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood. Here I see a little bit of Dr. Luke writing, a little bit of humor. I think people there were, at these early churches, were saying, oh, woe is us, woe is us, woe is us. And Dr. Luke says, look, I've had people come to me and they're bleeding, you know. It's not that bad. You're not bleeding yet. Your lives haven't unraveled. But look at this. He says, you haven't come to that point in your striving against sin. That word striving is very important for the whole chapter. Because it's very surprising that that word striving has a very specific meaning. You know what it means? It means boxing. He's describing a boxing match. Furthermore, if you look down at verse 11, see the word trained? The word translated trained in verse 11? It's where we get the word gymnasium. So specifically, he's talking about teaching boxing in a gym. He's talking about a gymnasium where boxing is being taught. So the picture here is the world comes at us, swinging at us, doesn't it? Circumstances come hammering at us. And the passage is, God's discipline is God's preparing us to deal with the blows that the world brings against us. So what happens is, when those blows come in our life, those attacks come, those circumstances, our Father is our boxing coach. He's in our corner and He's training us. He's developing us for skills in the ring. So, point one, the context of the teaching is it's sin directed against us, not our own. By the way, so doesn't that mean He certainly would not whip us? If He's teaching us how to deal with what the world throws at us, He's going to whip us also? Of course not. Secondly, the image is in a gym. It's boxing. Now, three, who is the student? Well, obviously we are. I guess a better question is, what's the nature of the coach and the pupil-teacher relationship? Well, in verses 5, 6, 7, you see the word sons. Only 8 times you have the word son. Passage, there's a word translated sons. That word sons is very important because it's a word that means adult sons and daughters, grown up sons and daughters, and not little children. It's very important to understand our relationship with God. You see, He has a motherly love for us as if we were little children. That's His maternal side. That's His affectionate love, as if we're little children. However, as He develops us, He deals with us more like a father. And in that sense, we're grown up sons and daughters. Now, in the Roman Empire, some families would adopt a baby. And when they did, obviously it was for their benefit as well as the benefit of the child. Right? They wanted the benefit, the joy of having a child. They wanted to benefit the child's life. Now, when a family, many times a wealthy family in the Roman Empire, would adopt a fully grown person. Now, in that case, they really didn't get much of the joy of raising a child. Whenever the wealthy family would adopt a full-grown child, it was a person, it would be totally for the benefit of that other person. To bring them out of some bad situation and bring them into good situation. Isn't that exactly what happened to us? He brought us out of the world, adopted us as His own. And again, He has maternal feelings of us the way we do for a little child, but He deals with us like grown-up children. Now, how do you deal with grown-up children? Well, you counsel them. You coach them. So, here's the picture. We're in a gym. We're in a ring. You need to be picturing the theme music from Rocky right now. And there's Apollo Creed over there in the corner. And he's the world. But we're the defending champions, by the way. So, we come in hoping to hear that music. Dun, 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 dun. If you don't, I'll help you. We're in that boxing match, and circumstances and trials are our opponent. Jesus is our coach. Now, if we understand that, this passage will make perfect sense. And we'll see many of the key words in this passage are also tied to the context of teaching in a gym. It'll make perfect sense. And again, let me say, He's not trying to add to our load. He's trying to lighten it. He's not whipping us. He's developing us so we won't be whipped. Verse 5, you have forgotten the exhortation. It's a very religious word. You know what it says? The dialogue. You have forgotten the dialogue, which is addressed to you as adult sons. See, if we don't understand that it means adult sons, we won't get what he's talking about. He says, you've forgotten that he's dialoguing with you as adult sons. Grown-up sons and daughters. Now, what have we forgotten? My son, my grown-up son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. And let me back up. I need to explain one more thing. We have this picture of discipline as God spanking us. I have a friend whose daughter told him, I hate Hebrews 12 because basically it says God's going to whack you. I agree with that. That's what it seems like to me. I read that passage, I think scourging and chastening and whipping and flogging. I'm thinking, oh, that sounds pleasant. I know some of you in here like pain. I don't want to know about it. I don't. He says, if we get a picture that God's discipline is, he takes us to the woodshed and spanks us. He says, we've forgotten that he's treating us like adult sons. See, there's nothing to fear here. Now, I'm going to show you today, in this gym that we're talking about, in the boxing arena, God has much more power than any human beings do. A good coach can coach us on how to win those fights on boxing skills. What God can do is guarantee the outcome. And He does. We don't facilitate that when trials come. We don't try to get out of it. We don't try to help it. He's going to do it. However, there are two things we can do to hinder what He's doing. And one of them is, verse 5, my son, do not regard lightly. It says, do not despise. Do not despise. Do not hate the discipline of the Lord. And the word discipline is another word that means development in the context of a gym. It's a physical training going on. He says, don't hate it. Now, let's pause for a minute. If discipline meant spanking, well, of course, we would hate it, wouldn't we? See, I get tired of people saying, well, yes, he does spank us. He takes us to the woodshed, but we don't need to hate it because it's for our own good. If somebody's hitting me, I don't care if it's for my own good or not, I'm going to hate it. When I was in high school, I used to get licks, frequently. We had a choice every day. You could go to an hour of detention hall or get spanked. Those spankings were brutal. I mean, they really were. I would have much rather gone to an hour of detention hall, but all the other guys were getting the licks and they were looking at it, so I had to do it. And every time we get the same spiel. This is not to punish you. This is correct you. And I'm thinking, I don't care. Oh, well, that stopped hurting then. So you see, people say, well, you should not hate it when God spanks us for your own good. I'm sorry. If He's spanking us, we're going to hate it. But we get the wrong idea. And again, here's the sequence. Those blows come into our life. Adverse trial, circumstances. Secondly, I promise you, our first thought's going to be, God's punishing me. And then third, definitely then, we will despise it. And again, let me stress, if He were punishing us, we should hate it. And then four, we'll miss valuable training. How to deal with whatever current trial it is, and how to minimize the impact of future trials. You see, I think we just approach this whole concept of discipline with the wrong thinking to begin with. We have fear, and just the thought of it clouds our vision. I remember at elementary school, every year, and towards the end of the year, we'd start wondering who our teacher is going to be for next year. And we'd start asking, ooh, what about her? Is she hard? Is she strict? I still remember that one. Is she strict? Ooh, she's strict. Can't have her. There was one teacher I had in the fifth grade. Her name was Mrs. Harder. And at the end of the fourth grade, we went, oh, don't get her. Don't get her just because of the name. By the way, she was a great teacher. But you see, I always started those years with trepidation going, I've heard she's hard. I've heard she's strict. I got a feeling that's how we think God's doing to us. We're wondering, is He going to punish me today? Is He going to ease up on me? What's He going to do to me? And we think this whole concept of discipline is He's going to spank us. Ironically, He's not going to spank us. He sent that into it. He did not send that trial. The trial came. He guarantees He's going to work it out. He's going to do great things through it. We just don't help. That's all we have to do. Don't hinder. How do we hinder? One, we think He's going to punish me and I hate it. Here's a second way we hinder it. Verse 5, nor faint. That means become, literally, it means don't become weak-kneed in fear. Now, see if this makes sense. When we're in a trial, in an adverse circumstance, just being in that circumstance, by nature, we hate it, don't we? I mean, who likes ordeals? Who likes trials? People think sometimes, well, you're supposed to enjoy it when you're in a trial. Well, yeah, if you're some kind of masochist, I think normal people don't enjoy trials. So just being in a trial, we hate it. And then it's compounded. It's compounded by worry. What's going to be the outcome of this? Isn't that where we are? We get in a trial. We hate it just by being in a trial. But it's compounded by how's this going to come out? We don't like it, and we're fearful of how it's going to end. We get weak-kneed. Now, physically, when we get weak-kneed, it hinders our walk, doesn't it? Well, spiritually, the same thing happens. Because when we get weak-kneed, it hinders our walk, our life, too. We want to have a joyous relationship with God. That's hindered. We want to have relationships with other people. When we're in a trial, when we start getting fearful, all that's hindered. We have weak need. We're afraid. We're afraid of what's going to happen. I'm going to show you today, there's no reason to faint. Because we're going into His gym. I see a lot of billboards around here, Gold's Gym. I thought, no, this is God's gym. See, and God's gym is great. Because God's gym, He controls the outcome. No reason to fear, no reason to faint. And see, if we fear and if we are faint, we'll do what's wrong. We approach something with fear. Oh, hell, well, I remember this. My first couple of years in college, we're at a junior college. That's when everybody had to have 2 years of PE. Remember that? College? My first two semesters, it was great. Odessa College, I got baseball, football. I go to UT, University of Texas, and I didn't pre-register. We couldn't. So I couldn't take any fun thing. I got stuck in physical conditioning two semesters. First, I hated it. It was a lot of calisthenics and everything running. Then it got better. We had a wide variety of sports, which I liked. Except 1 week we had boxing. I didn't like that. And he gave us a few days of classroom training. I wasn't paying attention. I think it was they need to. Until I show up and it's time for boxing matches. And of course, you knew who I drew. There was this mutant in our PE class. There was some bad chromosomal mix-up. I mean, he was like the creature from the Black Lagoon. And weird. And as we start lining, start getting our place in the ring, he starts telling what he's going to do to me. Not one thing was good. Well, I went to that ring, yes, with fear. I hated it, and I was faint. The two things we're not supposed to do in trials. I hated it, and I was weak-kneed. Here's a rule. If we approach a situation, a trial, and we're afraid, or weak-kneed, or hated, we will do what's wrong. You can never forget that. We're in a trial, we're afraid, we're faint. We will do what's wrong. And that's exactly what I did. I looked and I saw the coach wasn't looking. And I sucker punched that guy right in the gut. A legal punch. He hit the mat and I won. And the beauty of it was I could tell he was trying to rat me out, but he couldn't catch his breath. Now, actually, let me tell you about that example. See, I missed. Because I approached it wrong from the very beginning, I approached it with fear. When he said the subject's boxing, I clammed up. I got weak-kneed. Again, maybe it's just some quirky thing about me. I don't like being hit. Again, maybe that's just me. I don't like pain. But I missed a lot of instruction because of that. Having said that, that example I gave you is a terrible example. Forget I even said it. Because who cares if we learn anything about boxing, right? Now, in God's gym, there's the difference. The lessons He has for us are valuable, and we'll be glad we know them. What He does is valuable. Now, but again, we have a misconception about what that discipline is. We don't catch on. He's helping us in the current situation, minimizing future ones. No reason to hate, no reason to fear. Now, the reason we think He's punishing us is that, well, it just seems natural to us. And also, it doesn't help by the words. He says, nor faint when you are reproved by Him. Well, reproved means rebuke, chasten. In fact, many of the translations say rebuke, chasten. Actually, the word is re-proved. And it's interesting. I've always admired the King James translators. They did by far the best translation with what they had. The only problem is they had very bad manuscripts. But the manuscripts they had, they correctly translated it. And the word is prove again. That's exactly what it means. Does not even mean chasten, rebuke. What happened was, the first King James translators put the word re-proved. Subsequent translators then said, oh, reprove. Well, see what had happened? By that time, the word had changed. Take out the dash and it becomes reproof, rebuke, chasten. That's how it got translated that way. Now, what does it mean to reprove? Well, remember, all these key words have to be taken in the context of this is God's gym. This is a training for boxing. So, when adverse circumstances come into our life, those trials, we have to remember two things. One, God did not send that trial. I think it's a very common misconception that God sent the trial. He didn't. Here's our model, the prodigal son. The prodigal son got off into severe trials, didn't he? Did the father send those trials? Certainly not. God does not send those. However, when the trials come, God takes those trials and brings them into His gym. You know why He does that? Because in His gym, those fights are rigged. He has fixed the fights. Something comes at us, He didn't send it, but picture that circumstance as an enemy. God says, let's hold it. See, the enemy wants to fight us out in the streets. God says, no, we're going to hold this fight in my gym. Why? Because He cheats for us. He's fixed the fight. It's rigged. It's already guaranteed. We're going to win. Now, you know what? I wouldn't have been afraid to get in that ring if the coach had called me aside and said, I've already fixed it. I've already rigged it. I wouldn't have been afraid. Well, that's what God does to us. He says, don't worry, this guy came at you. Don't worry, I got him into this gym. It's rigged. you're going to win. That trial that's coming, or the trial that's here, it's guaranteed we're going to win. He's fixed it. He's rigged it. Now, what does it mean to reprove? Well, remember, we go into this match, we're the defending champions. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, says we're God's masterpiece. We're already His champion. So this trial comes, it's guaranteed we win. Then you know what? The next trial comes, it's also guaranteed we'll win that one too. Why? He's fixed all those fights. So every trial that comes, we are reproved. We are recertified as the champions. So, trials come, there's no reason to hate them. There's no reason to faint. The outcome's rigged. It's guaranteed we'll win. We don't forget now, He's our Father. Verse 6, for those whom the Lord loves, He disciplines. And the word disciplines, again, it just means develops. And it's, again, developing in the context of that gem. But He does it in love. Now, in a minute, in a few verses, He's going to compare the love of human parents and the discipline of human parents with the love and discipline of our Heavenly Father. So let's think about that. Let's compare our Heavenly Father with our earthly parents. Or let's think about you and how you dealt with your children. Now, you did not want your children to get burned by matches, right? Now, did you teach the child to not get burned by matches by burning him with a match? Wouldn't that be terrible? Did you teach your child to not get out in the street by putting him out there in front of a car and letting the car hit his hand? It's unthinkable what I just said. But I guarantee you that's what we think God does to us. He teaches us something's wrong by bringing that thing into our life. That would be terribly cruel. Now, certainly we don't say, now, you don't want to play with matches, here's what will happen, and then burn them. However, you know what will happen? They'll burn themselves. Then what do? We heal them. It's exactly what God does to us. Circumstances come into our life. He does the healing. Think about the prodigal son again. By the way, it's called the parable of the prodigal son. I don't like that. I wish it was called the parable of the loving father, because he's the focus. Prodigal son goes off. Again, the father did not send those trials, but what did he do? He healed the son when he came back. So, those trials come. God didn't send them. But he brings them into the gym. He says, don't worry. You're not going to shed blood. Your life's not going to come unraveled. I've got it under control. Now, back to the prodigal son again. That father, remember, he didn't send the trial. He healed the son when he came back. But God can do even better, because God can control those events. Verse 6. And he, it's translated, scourges every son whom he receives. A brutally wrong translation. It's just absolutely terrible. You see, before I tell you what it means, let me say, the word scourge, well, I just say that they have missed it by one letter. One little letter makes all the difference. The word scourge is from a word that means to flog with a whip with pieces of bone, metal, and glass in it. And people who were scourged, they were beaten so severely that literally all of the skin on their back was gone. All of it. And most of them died from the scourging. It's what Pilate had done to Jesus. Many people died from that alone. That scourging. Now, nobody, I don't believe, I've heard some extreme views about how God disciplines. I don't believe anybody would think that God the Father whips us like that. That would be unbelievable. Again, it's a difference of one letter. The word is not scourge. It's the word develops, and it means in the context of a gem. In fact, let me tell you two things. In that culture, whenever they would see the word develop, they would think of two things that happen in a gem. Fat is removed and muscle is added. Now, you see, that's exactly how God uses those trials. Remember, He didn't send them, but He uses them to develop us. In our lives, He's removing fat and adding muscle. What is fat? Well, fat is too much flesh. Too much baggage. You see, all of us, every one of us to some degree, in our life we have ingrained tendencies, habits, ways we deal with other people, and it's fat. It's things we carry around, but no good purpose. That's like fat, isn't it? You carry it around, but it's no good purpose. So you see, we're running this race, the race of life. But there's some ball and chain we keep dragging along behind us. You know what that is? Well, partly, it's we all have self-destructive tendencies. I have known people who worked with me or in a company I was with, and they were fired for doing things. And then many times I could sort of keep track of where they went, and I would happen to know that wherever they went, they kept getting in the same situations. I felt sorry for many of them because I think many of them never knew it. They weren't really aware. But they had self-destructive tendencies. And their whole life they were carrying that ball and chain. They'd be successful, something would happen. Tragedy, disaster. And it, partly because of the fat, the baggage, the tendencies they had. And again, to all of us, to a degree, have it. You've heard people say, well, he's his own worst enemy. In many cases, we are our own worst enemy. We have ingrained habits that we do that keep short-circuiting our own success. That's fat. Now, God uses those adverse circumstances to get rid of it. So, when we have adverse circumstances, now, I'm going to make this very clear. Some of those trials, to a degree, were caused by ourselves. We short-circuited something. We undermine something. We're in self-destruct mode. Sometimes. The reason I want to make it clear is that most of the time, the trials that we come into our life, we did not cause those. It wasn't our self-destructive tendencies. We didn't do anything. It was just the world. However, when we're in those trials, our fat, our wrong self-destructive tendencies can hinder resolving the current trial, and it can trigger future trials. Again, God didn't send it, but He uses it like in a gym. He's a training coach, getting rid of that fat. Now, how does He do that? Or let me ask, how do we help get rid of that fat? Oh, don't. That's where we mess up. Don't try to get rid of the fat. You see, and that's where the analogy between human coaches and God coach breaks down. Because, see, if we're working in a gym, if we want to get rid of fat and add muscle, there's things we have to do. None of them pleasant, but there are things we have to do. There's no miraculous thing, despite what you see on television, where somebody can just miraculously melt fat and add muscle. Well, you know what? In God's gym, that's exactly the way it works. Because, see, we don't do anything. And here's the beauty of those trials that come into our lives. He has tailored them specifically for us. Talk about a personal trainer. He has brought a trial into our life that is so perfect that it will remove fat from our lives without us having to do anything. All we do is don't hate it. Don't despise it. And see, don't try to figure out what it is. I think it's a big mistake Christians make. I think many times we sense, yes, he's trying to get rid of some harmful thing in my life. I wonder what it is. And we try to figure out. Don't even go there. I mean, when I'm losing weight, I don't analyze what kind of fat tissue I lost. I don't care. It's gone. And I trust that processes get rid of it. You know what? Now, it may be obvious as it develops what it is. It may not. Just relax. Trials come. Relax. Why? Remember, he's rigged the outcome. It's already fixed. So, trials come. Don't hate it. Don't faint. What's our Hebrews word? Rest. He'll get rid of that fat on our own. I'll tell you one way he does it. He will tailor that trial so that we are forced to do nothing. You ever had situations, trials, when there was nothing you could do? I don't know about you, but I hate those. I hate them and I grow faint. Nothing I can do. Oh, let me tell you something. If you're ever in a trial where there's absolutely nothing you can do, there is no question what's going on. He's getting rid of fat. Because you see, when he restricts all of our options, here's why. If we had any options, if there was something we would be doing, if he didn't shut them off, it would be our fat. It would be those self-destructive tendencies. Does that make sense? He presents a trial where if we could do something, it would be self-destructive. It would be those same old fat things, those old habits we carry around. So God puts us in a situation where there's absolutely nothing we can do. So you know what happens? We start dropping that habit. We're not even trying to. We just start dropping it because He has restricted our ability to do it. He's supernaturally removing that flesh. That's again, don't try to figure out what He's doing. Don't try to figure out, well, what particular thing is He removing from my life? Don't worry about that. What's our part? Remember so far, what's our two commands? Don't despise it and don't faint. That's all we do. Relax, He's taking care of it. Now, in addition to removing fat, some trials add muscle. You see, in that race of life, sometimes we get tripped up on things. My problem with racing is I don't have enough speed. I can have a smooth sailing track, and I just don't have enough speed to win. Well, in areas of our life, in our lives, there are times when we have fat. We have baggage, ingrained things that self-destruct, bring self-destruction. We also have areas in our lives where it's not some deficiency, where it's not some excess baggage we have. We just need more oomph. We just need more power. We just need more of something. And again, God will tailor those circumstances. They come into our life, and it's exactly what we need for that, because many times what He will do is He will bring a trial into our life that requires us to do one thing. Remember, now the fat removal, He restricts all options. The muscle builder trials come in, and then we'll find we just have one thing we can do. It will just so happen that one thing we can do is exactly the area where our muscles need to be developed in our life. It's amazing. It's supernatural. And again, don't try to figure out, well, I'm deficient here, I'm deficient. No, let Him do it. Relax and rest. Verse 7, it is for discipline that you endure. Fuller religious terms, let me tell you what it says. First, the word discipline means development, and the word endure means resilient. So let me translate it this way. The purpose of development is that we will become resilient. It's a lot better, isn't it? See, not endure. I've heard people say, well, look at those trees. Remember, have you ever seen those ugly, gnarled trees who have grown up in bitter wind? They go, look how ugly they are, but they've survived. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't sound very appealing to me. I don't want to be all gnarly and covered with bark, and people say, yeah, but look at Johnny, he survived. I don't want to be hardened, I want to be resilient. Roll with the flow. Roll with those punches. You know what? If we're freezing up, the world's going to keep decking us. Keep moving. Remember, Satchel Paige said, as you walk along, keep shaking everything. He said, don't freeze up. And I'm sorry, anybody who pitches in the major leagues at the age of 65, I'm going to believe what he says.
Something may be gained, though.
He says, don't look behind you. Something may be gained. Yes, that's right.
Don't look back.
And don't look back. That's right. Now, here's what's happened. He says, it's so you'll become resilient. And here's what's happened. Let me back up. The best way to define the word resilient is to explain what its opposite is. The opposite of resilient is uptight. So whatever the opposite of uptight is, that's what resilient means. What, chilled out? Calm? Relaxed? You see, here's what happens. When trials come into our life, don't we tend to withdraw? When trials come, don't we, if we're naturally working with other people and visiting, when trials come, don't we tend to kind of minimize that? We tend to withdraw. We tend to freeze up. Now, what's happening is, what's happened? Is that we've gone into that trial with fear and we're fainting. That means we're freezing up to do the right things too. He says, relax. He reminds us. Verse 7, God deals with you as sons. The reason he keeps saying that, remember now, the original readers would have heard this. God deals with you as full-grown adults. For what adult is there whom his father does not discipline? So now he compares the two. Verse 9, we had earthly fathers who developed us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? First, the Father of spirits, it says, should we not be subject, and it means, oh, by the way, should we not be in authority to the Father of everything who breathes? That's what it says, and that's important. And live. What does he mean by live? Have a bountiful life, have a good life where we're running uninhibited and freely. Now, he says he's the father of everything who breathes. What does he mean? Here's the picture. Good human parents, we do our best, don't we, to develop our children's lives. We teach them so they won't do wrong. And if they're young children, we spank them if they do wrong so they won't do wrong in the future. But when they grow up, we give them counsel. Now, the best parents have limitations. Think of the very best parents have limitations because the best parents cannot totally control external events in our children's lives, can we? Maybe to some degree we can, but normally we can't. Because we can't control anybody who comes into our children's lives. However, the Father of these spirits can, because He's the Father of everything who breathes. That means all those people tormenting us, He created them. I guarantee you, in all of our trials, somewhere along the way, there's some problem with somebody who's over there breathing. God says, don't worry, they're breathing in His gym. So, I want to start to wrap this up. When trials come into our life, we want to see that He's doing things for us. And He's doing things externally too. What's He doing for us? He's removing that fat and He's adding muscle. Now, secondly, and here's where human coaches, human teachers, human parents cannot duplicate what God does. God controls the outcome of those events. And here's the amazing thing about trials. It's not just that He guarantees that we'll win, although He does. We'll get through it. It's not just He's removing fat, although He will. It's not just that He's adding muscle, although He will. The really unbelievable thing is that God uses trials to produce something better in our life than if the trial had not even happened. You see, it's like if someone says, a trial comes into our life, God says, let's bring that in my gym. That's where He cheats for us. He's rigged it. He's guaranteed we'll win. But beyond that, it's as if He says, okay, Apollo Creed, you lost. Now, give my kids some money. An example of that is Egypt. Israel was in Egyptian captivity for 400 years. That was a long trial. But it was okay. God guaranteed He'd get them out. It was rigged. The fight was rigged. He brought them out. Guess who financed their trip? God robbed the Egyptians and gave it to the Israelites. So at the end of the trial, they were ahead of where they were before the trial started. What do we do? Just don't hate it. Just don't faint when those trials come. He guarantees we'll win. It'll be something better. Let me give you a quick example of somebody who approached a trial very wrong and missed the whole point, and that was Jeremiah. God brought a trial into his life to remove fat, add muscle, and to bring him to a better situation than before the trial. He missed it because Jeremiah despised it and he grew faint. Let me give you a little background quickly. Babylon was about to conquer Israel. There were two factions in Israel. One faction said, fight Babylon. Other factions said, no, submit to Babylon. Jeremiah was one of the factions that said, submit to Babylon. Why? That's what God said. He'd tell them to submit to Nebuchadnezzar. Their lives would be a whole lot easier. But his enemies kept coming at him. I'm considering if we want to do this. I think we ought to finish this next time. I don't want to rush through this. This is much too important. Because Jeremiah is a classic example of how God brought discipline into his life. God never intended it to hurt him. In fact, He didn't intend to even draw blood. He tended to sustain him through the trial, remove fat, add muscle. It was guaranteed he would win. And also, God told Jeremiah, when this trial is over, you will be glad it came because your life will be better after than it was before. And Jeremiah does what we did, the two things that we should not do. He hated it and he grew faint. Yeah, I want to finish this. But anybody have any questions so far? I think if we stop now, it's okay. If we understand, it's in the context of sin against us. And let me go ahead and say this in case I forget next week. This is in the context of sin against us. Trials that come into our life we didn't cause. You may be thinking, what about the trials that come into our life when I know very well I caused them? You know what? It's exactly the same. Scripture remarkably makes no distinctions whatsoever between trials that come into our life when we were innocent and trials that come when we caused it. There's no difference at all. So everything we learn about trials, it applies whether we caused it or not. In fact, remember, there's a particular kind of mercy reserved for trials we brought completely on ourselves. Remember what that's called? Hesed mercy. All right, well, let's just finish this next week. I don't want to rush it. For some reason, I'm way ahead of everybody else on Hebrews anyway. Okay?
For next week?
What?
Should we save this for next week?
No, I'll bring others. That's a great question. No, not at all. I'm going to tell you what I did, Kay. I'm glad you asked because it caused me concern too. Because I read it and I saw the picture of a gymnasium. There's no question whatsoever. I see a gym and a training coach and development and pounding the thing. I mean, it's extremely obvious and very, very common classical imagery. So then I don't normally do commentaries. Normally, I don't do commentaries. And the reason is, I despise them and I grow faint. I don't like them. But I thought, I better check this. I didn't find one. Not one. In fact, a guy I love, J. Vernon McGee. I read J. Vernon McGee. I love Vernon McGee. Boy, on this one, first of all, he correctly pointed out, he said, by the way, the word son in here is a word that means full-grown son. And Vernon said, so God does not, you don't spank full-grown people. And then he went on to say, he said, a lesson I learned was, when I had cancer, God was punishing me. Let me tell you what I did find. I went back and back. The early church fathers, finally, they all knew what it was. They said it's a training, it's a boxing class. They all knew. So they did not explain it. They didn't know what to do with it. But Augustine, for example, St. Augustine, Jerome, Anselm, Aquinas, all of them, I checked, they all said this is a boxing ring and it's a coaching going on here. It's development.
But you still can get beaten up.
No, but you know what? I think part of the reason is we go into that ring despising it, fainting, thinking God's punishing us, and we get rigid instead of resilient.
Well, because maybe you're not listening. You're not listening. You're just focused on the surface.
And that's what Jeremiah did. Jeremiah got all beat up because, remember, if we have fear or if we are weak-kneed, we will do what's wrong. It's absolute guarantee. That should be scary, shouldn't it? If we're in a trial, if we're afraid, or if we feel faint, weak-kneed, or if we're hating it, we will do what's wrong. Right, right. We will do what's wrong. If we are in a trial, not hating it, not fainting it, knowing it's rigged in our favor, we'll do what's right. In fact, he says, he refers, we'll see it next week, he refers to something very important. He says, the peaceful fruit. He said, trials produce the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Righteousness, don't think religious. Think doing what's right. All right, we'll cover that next week. Father, again, we thank you for this powerful chapter on discipline. We thank you that it is not something we dread. It is something we welcome because it comes from our loving Father, who guarantees the outcome and uses it for our good, never punishes us, never causes anything for fear. Now, above all, we thank you for Jesus, who did receive punishment. He was whipped, and he was flogged, and he was taken out of fellowship. We thank you that he endured all things so we do not have to, and we thank you in his name today. Amen.